We're just normal men.
What do you mean, normal men?
We're just innocent men.
Expect Casey to try to put a little something extra on the slider here.
Sun comes out from behind a cloud, and suddenly we have sunshine covering the infield. A 1-2 pitch to the plate.
Swing and a miss! He struck him out! He struck him out! He struck him out! Aggies are going to the College World Series!
Howdy, guys. Welcome back to the Red Ass Podcast. Today is April 23rd, Tuesday. We're running a day late and a little late on a Tuesday, but a lot of travel, a lot of craziness going on. So baseball and softball will be going on while we're rolling here, but that's okay. It's not too big of a deal. Should be a fun roll today.
Yeah, it's a day late and a dollar short is where we're at right now. I was gone Friday. I got back late last night, and so 4 days off of work, trying to play catch up today. And then on top of that, my daughter wrecked her car. So I had to get a tow truck, and the tow truck was like 2 hours late today. So that's just been a welcome back.
It has been a welcome back. Well, welcome back to the podcast. I'm Rob White, fighting Texas A class of 14.
And I'm Roy May, fighting Texas A class 2015.
Yeah. And we had ourselves a pretty productive weekend overall on many different fronts, baseball, softball in particular, for sure. But yeah, lots of good stuff going on. No question about it.
Yeah. You know, baseball gets the weather delay on Friday. Not a weather delay, just a postponement straight up, straight up postponement. So they got to play a doubleheader
It got held up on a Thursday, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. Cause it was Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. Excuse me. So it was held up, like postponed on a Thursday. So played a double and then on Saturday finished up the series. I didn't get to see all of it because I was traveling, unfortunately. Right. I was watching a little bit of it, and then I didn't pay for the Wi-Fi on the plane, so but that was okay. I had a book I've been trying to read anyways, but as soon as we landed, so I went from IAH to Denver and then from Denver to Durango, and so I had like an hour and 45 minutes in Denver, so I caught quite a bit of the game in the Denver airport, and I was watching all the way through until basically the plane gets so high that you run out of cell service. Mm-hmm. But I got to catch a good bit of it, and I watched all of the final game, which was unfortunate ending. You're right there in the game the whole time. The bullpen just really struggled in the third game. Mm-hmm. We've talked a little bit about the bullpen. It's just finding the right pieces at the right time kind of thing. And again, I'm not going to sound any alarms. You went on the road and took 2 out of 3 against a team that took down Arkansas the week before. And I think we talked about this last week. Like, what are the odds of getting the number one team of the nation 2 weeks in a row in baseball?
Yeah, that's the beauty of the SEC, right?
But that doesn't even have in football, though, normally,
Yeah.
Like, considering how many more teams are in baseball, that's an insane metric for them. And I thought it was really funny. The lines coming out at the end of the series, at the end of the game on Saturday, they're like, Alabama takes down number one, for the second week in a row. You're like, you beat us one run in the final game. But I was watching the game, and we get our final out, and the pitcher like posed on the mound like he was the baddest dude on the planet. And don't get me wrong, he came in for relief, and they just rode him, and he did a great job. He really did. But are you really going to showboat, given what we did to y'all the day before? Like, are you really going to stand there and showboat?
Well, you have a team that just came in here, scored 10, 18, and 9 runs on you consecutively over the course of 3 games. Mind you, I think the thing that was so fascinating to me is the fact that you did get a true metric of, a control, as it were, with Alabama as a team at their same spot with the number one team coming in back-to-back weeks. Arkansas goes in, can't win the series. A&M goes in and wins the series on the first day and takes care of business, more or less reinforcing the opinion that A&M, yes, is the number one team at the moment, no question. But also, you come out here and do your job, get yourself in a couple of pickles at points, especially early in the first game and a little bit in the late game, but you kept fighting, and you just showed the thing that A&M has been able to do all season, which is fight back. That has been the case. Like, even if the pitching hasn't been completely stellar all the time, the bats at some point across the board take full advantage. And most games you're going to be able to win with 9 runs, granted. you know, when your relief pitching can't quite do it in game three, it is what it is. And we just got to keep hoping that that pitching continues to develop as we get closer towards the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, the pitching, it's I don't think the pitching is necessarily going to develop, but I think that, you know, again, the more data points for Slauson, for Coach Wiener, you know, the more, it's not just data points, strikes, balls, outs, you know, fly balls. It's not just that kind of stuff. It's also metrics of, you want to go and talk to this kid when he's struggling, how does he respond? And that's one of my favorite things to see is after Coach Wiener goes to the mound to see the very next pitch. Like, I want to know how this kid's responding to this. And generally across the entire season has been very positive.
Yeah.
But, you know, every once in a while you see it where he goes out there and he talks to him. And in the next pitch, the kid doesn't hit the plate. And I feel like every time he goes out there, he said, dude, calm down and just throw a strike.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's all just, that's pretty much all Coach Wiener says. Like, hey, remember all that crap we worked on for like months and months and months?
Do that.
Do that. Yeah. Dominate the zone. DTZ. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always I always pay attention to that, that first pitch coming out of a mound visit, you know? But what's funny is we're at the point, and I've probably mentioned it about this team, but it reminds me of like Johnny's Heisman year.
Sure.
It didn't matter. You always thought you had a chance.
Yeah.
You never thought you were going to lose.
Yeah.
And this baseball team, it doesn't matter how far they get down and how early they, you know, to me, and I know that it's the whole shades on six thing, but it's starting to be the fourth or fifth inning for these guys.
No question about it. We've seen them really turn it up. And that was something I found really fascinating in game one. So I rolled up to the Cigar Lounge here in town that Thursday. And as I, or I guess on that Friday, I kept walked in the door and you know, we're already trailing in the game. Bobby, who's sitting behind the counter, he's just sitting here shaking his head. We're down 5-0. He's like, this is ridiculous. And these were the words out of my mouth. I said to him, hey, buddy, we haven't gotten to the third time around in the lineup yet. These guys are getting ready to start hitting on this guy. And the moment they pull him, they're toast. What happened in the fifth? Literally that.
Yeah, there has not been a bullpen that has been able to consistently shut down this lineup. And, well, really, there hasn't been a starting rotation able to shut down this lineup outside of that first complete anomaly at this point series against Florida.
Right.
You just look it up and down the lineup. You got Gavin Grohovec again, 2 weeks in a row, SEC Freshman of the Week. The kid just mashes. You know, he's such a mature player for his age. And we all know that Charlie Condon, who's coming in town this weekend, and it's probably must-see TV, to be honest. The dude has a homer in like 11 straight games, something like that. Or that might be the Florida guy, I'm not sure. But all we heard about is this dude mashing the ball, right? He's got a jillion homers. He's batting north of 500. And then I look up, and Brady Montgomery's only two homers behind him, two, three, four homers behind him. That's it. And so
with a stacked lineup of guys that could also mash, like, that's the beauty of it.
It seems so weird because it's as though Braden Montgomery has been going about it just very workmanlike and quiet-like, and Charlie Condon's getting all of, you know, and don't get me wrong, the numbers he's putting up they're just ridiculous. Game. Nobody bats north of 500 this late in the season. I mean, what are you doing, guy? Yeah. But Braden Montgomery just very quietly is kind of hanging in there with him. And then I saw somewhere three of the top five home run guys in the nation are going to be in town. It's Condon, Braden, and Jace.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a north wind.
Yeah.
You know, the wind's going to be blowing out.
Well, and it's funny you mentioned that north wind because I've been eyeballing the forecast over the next several days. There's a extended 3 to 4 day severe threat north of us in regions like Oklahoma, Kansas. But because of that pressure, all of the wind is blowing north. So it's just a natural conclusion. That's something we're going to have to deal with this week.
Well,
be blowing out.
It's not just meteorology, or yeah. it's not just trash talk. It's actual meteorology.
Yeah.
Oklahoma sucks.
Yes, indeed it does. The joys of low pressure systems in Oklahoma. Sorry, you suck. You bring in all the wind with you. That's why it's so windy up there.
So it should be a mash fest. Honestly, if I'm Salas, I just walk him every single time. If nobody's on base, let him have a homer. Who cares?
Right.
You know, unless it's a tie game, it's the ninth kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't even – why would anybody pitch to him?
Yeah, I mean that's the question that gets asked, and we see the same thing too in situation, but like, you know, with Braden Montgomery, but that's the problem with that top part of that lineup, whether it's Gavin, whether it's Jace, whether it's Braden, any of those three guys, like, I'm gonna walk this one. Well, you still have the next one, and you still have the one after that, and even Appel after that can mash it around, even Ted Burton after that could mash it around. It's just crazy.
Well, and Schott has been playing great.
Yes, he has.
Yeah, so it's not just, you know,
Yeah,
but
he looks.
Georgia's, I mean, they're 500 in conference. They're not terrible, but
No.
Braden has people around him. What does Charlie have around him? And a 500 record would tell you that not, at least not what we have, right? I mean,
Right.
granted, I don't think you're going to be able to look anywhere in the country and go 1 through 6 and see what we have. And I'll be honest, the 7, 8, and 9 rotations that Sloss has been kind of working around, I love it.
Me
Love
too.
Chestnut. Kane Sorrell is just unreal how much he's grown, you know, in just in this season. Remember, what was it? I can't remember who it was. He brought him in to pinch hit, and it was bases loaded or something like that. And he took a walk. A true freshman was able to take a walk, and the pitch he took the walk on was something that veterans swing at.
Yeah.
And to see him grow and Chestnut, that speed, you got to have him somewhere. So the ability to have Hayden Schott, DH, you know, freeing up space. That's huge to be able to get Chestnut speed in the lineup consistently and not just as a pinch runner.
Yeah.
Because you got other guys that can pinch run out of that dugout. But Ollie Camarillo, you know, he's really starting to see the ball. And yeah, you know, and again, performances aren't always gonna dictate that. We hit the ball really hard at people a lot.
Yeah.
It's not just we get stuck in it in one game. Our outs are generally pretty loud outs. Even the ground outs, the exit velocities are staggering for ground outs. So it's barreling the ball. The lineup is just stupid. It's just stupid. So you got Georgia, who's, you know, 9-9, very similar to where Alabama was to an extent, where we, you know, when we went to their house.
Yep, number 17 right now.
Well, yeah. So Alabama was, you know, sitting right around 500 before, you know, they were just under, but they were also coming off beating Arkansas, you know, and we're having to go on the road. So you've got Georgia coming to your house, gonna have the 12th man, you know, gonna have Section 203, gonna have what do you call it, Section 12 on the out, like the people out in Aggie Alley. It should be absolutely rocking at Olsen this weekend. And it's, I mean, do you? I'll just call it. They're going to win the series.
Oh yeah, I mean you
This is
go
how I
in,
feel.
yeah. We're you know you gotta like our opportunity to go in there, take the series, of course. And I would like to see a sweep, of course. As long as you're taking 2 or 3, that's always great. And you're still within striking distance of Georgia right now. Yeah. Well, you're in striking distance of Arkansas right now. Now they're only one game ahead of us in the West, and overall. So if we can just keep on rolling. And do what we do on our end. Gotta like what we do, especially late in the season when we catch up on that series.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're going to close the series with Arkansas, so
Yeah.
it's, you know, it's it, just keep winning your series. It'll play out because you'll have the opportunity to finalize it, you know, on the final weekend. But you also, between now and then, you get Georgia at home, you get Arkansas at home, and so your away series are wildly manageable relative to where those teams are in the standings.
And it's wild to think about wildly manageable with places like Alex Box Stadium and Swayze Field with
Crazy,
LSU and Ole Miss, who are two very good programs.
very proud programs.
Yes. And I mean, very recent national title winners who have significantly cooled off as far as their programs over the last couple seasons.
I mean, I don't know if you saw it. I don't know if you saw Slosh's Twitter earlier. I think it was maybe might have been over the weekend or something like that. Mike Bianco hit 1,000 wins. Like he congratulated him. Like that's how long that dude's been there.
Like 900 wins at Ole Miss alone, 1,000 total, which is in it's a crazy number. I mean,
Bonkers.
that's a
So
big.
he's not going anywhere this season. Like he's not like 22-18.
It's not great for them, but.
It's not great, but if they can finish strong minus our series, you never know. You know, just because the selection committee understands the strength of the SEC. Although this year, this like I'll be the first to eat crow on it. I thought Auburn was going to get it turned around. I thought they were too talented to be this bad. But man, 2-16 in conference, like that's bad, bad.
Yeah, they've cooled off quite a bit after our series, and it's wild.
I thought they would pick it up. I thought they just had too much talent, but that's why I don't recruit.
not our wheelhouse, that one.
No, not so much. But again, so you got the, you know, the midweek tonight. We still got what, two or three midweeks. It feels like there's more midweeks this year.
Yeah, we have ourselves U of H, and then we have Tarleton next week, Rice next week, all of which are at home, and that'll conclude our Tuesday games for the year. So
yeah, I feel like Tarleton and or Rice might be a cancel.
Yeah, it's especially that late. I mean, we tend to I could see Rice getting cut for sure.
You can beat them 50-1 and your RPI is going to drop.
Well, and Tarleton's the same way. I mean, that's not a top level baseball program, unfortunately. That's the trouble this late in the season. Like, you still book these games, but you really don't know what they're going to look like this late.
Yeah, I mean, but everybody's got them, so there's that, you know. So if you're going to play them, just make sure you win them. Tonight is both Diamonds are hosting Cougars.
They are.
So softball's got U of H as well. This is their last home stint.
Right. Very last home game, I believe, because after that, they're at Florida.
If you're not there tonight, I mean, get ready to fork over for some postseason tickets.
Yeah. I mean, what you're sitting at, well, depending on which poll you look at, I've seen them up at 9. I've seen them at a few different places, but I mean.
Bro, I saw them at 4.
I did see them at 4.
4 in one of the polls.
Yeah.
They have been unbelievable under Trish. We talk about this all the time.
Yeah.
Every week I talk about this. I gush over me. And there's, why wouldn't you? You sweep Ole Miss.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, they're just, I think Trish Ford mentioned it in an interview, like a post-game interview. She goes, we're playing Aggie softball and it's a ton of fun.
Well, and we didn't get a chance to talk about it either, but yeah, finishing up that season, that series at Alabama in pretty dominant fashion.
Yeah. So that's one of those things where, and we talked about that Saturday, Sunday, Monday series that softball's trying to do to get more eyes on the sport kind of thing.
Yeah.
It looks a lot like people had eyes on it and what we were able to do on the road in Alabama. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the people that are the writers and some of the people that are doing the polls, and I'll tell you this, it's every poll. They don't watch every game. They just look at box scores.
Right.
There's a bajillion of them. But once you saw, you know, on a Monday night, no, they didn't have anything to do either. So, you know, the softball writers and the pundits and the people who do the rankings and maybe some selection show folks, they tuned into that game. Series tie going into Monday night in Tuscaloosa. Let's see if these Aggies are for real. And the Aggies were for real.
Yep.
And so now those people are going, okay, well, I need to keep a closer eye on A&M. And then you watch, okay, so let's say they tuned in this weekend, at least to even one of the games, but check the box scores for the other two. And you sweep Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
And so now all of a sudden you've got all this momentum. And don't get me wrong, it's not like, I mean, Ole Miss is bottom of the league.
Right.
But
you did.
It doesn't matter. It's still the SEC.
Yeah.
You know, they're still over 500 overall.
Yeah.
So, they're finally getting the recognition I think they deserve. I don't know about 4, but I also didn't pay attention to what happened around, based off last week's rankings. Yeah. But I'm not going to complain. Now all of a sudden you're talking about both Diamonds hosting Supers and you're talking about it seriously. You know, before that Bama series win on that Monday night, and before you bring Ole Miss in and you sweep them, you're talking about maybe on the cusp of a super, but we were definitely hosting unless we just, you know, tank tonight and just get like run rule 3 times in a row this weekend.
Sure. Kind of thing, you know? Which we don't anticipate that happening, of course.
Gosh, no. Yeah, no, not at all. So now you're talking about legitimately being able to host supers on both Diamonds. And that is, I don't think you get, like, that makes me so excited to see success on both Diamonds for Texas A&M.
It reminded me of something I thought was really fascinating going back to 2017. So that year you had three schools in the SEC that had accomplished getting three teams to each of their respective College World Series. Those three schools were A&M, LSU, and Florida.
Wasn't Tennessee, really?
No, those three.
Wait, what year was that?
17.
Oh, okay.
So 2017, so 2017, three schools got both of their schools got both of their teams to the College World Series. And, I mean, that's on the cusp of what could happen based on what we're seeing here, obviously, which is really good for us.
Well, and think about it, right? This is true in every single sport. It's not the teams that start fast. Well, you know what? I'm going to remove college football from this, and then we're going to come back to college football and talk about it. Sure. Outside of college football, every sport, it's not the teams that are playing well early. It's the teams that are hitting their stride heading into the postseason.
Indeed.
Right?
Absolutely.
And it's basketball and baseball and softball are so similar in that sense where, you know, if you can just get in, if you're playing hot, you know, you feel good about your chances, right?
I mean, case in point, look at Ole Miss back in 2022. You want to talk
last team in?
Yeah.
That's one of the ultimate Cinderella stories, but it's almost not because, you know, they're coming out of the SEC and you saw them getting hot and you're like, oh shit, here comes Ole Miss.
And that's exactly what we all said. I mean, when we got to O-Town, that was something we all talked about. It was like Ole Miss is the hottest team coming into this tournament. A&M played well when we got there. We took care of business against Texas. We took care of business against Notre Dame. Unfortunately, you ran into a tough pitching matchup with Oklahoma and struggled and lost both of those games. But that same Oklahoma team then turns around, goes to the final, and gets smashed in two games. Because yeah, Ole Miss was just the best team in the tournament.
Just rolling. And I think maybe there was some trepidation. We're going to get back to football in a second. But I think there was some trepidation, you know, earlier in the season. You're thinking, man, like, at some point, you know, we got to go cold, right?
You got to think, but preferably not, of course.
But now you're talking about a one-off, and Bronny has mentioned this multiple times over the last month or so. Maybe this is that anomaly team. Like, maybe they are just that team.
Well, I mean, look at
the more you see it, the more you believe it.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about, I mean, there are historical examples of teams like that have just held. And, you know, you look at like LSU baseball last season, even. I mean, that was a team that really was just from the very beginning and throughout the rest of that year, just the best team on the damn schedule. And yeah, they finished the season out. They finished at 54-17. They went 19-10 in conference at that point. But for the most part, I mean, they pretty much dominated most of the season. I mean, they were ranked number one the entire season. Like, they held that, which is impressive.
And see, and this is where I'm going to go back to football real quick.
Yeah.
So baseball, softball, men and women's basketball. Preseason means a lot, but there's a lot of games played. So those rankings truly do fluctuate. They move a lot because the people doing the rankings understand that there's so much more to play and there's a lot more in play. And, you know, basketball has its tiers of wins. Baseball and softball, it's a home and away series. You know, how you deal with those. And depending on the team you are, like cough, Florida, like, are you just blowing every midweek game? Or, you know, is every midweek game, are you playing in Miami? Or are you playing in Florida State? Or are you playing like Florida Tech University? You know, it's just one of those things where there's so many more data points for the rankings to truly fluctuate. College football is really a hose job. And I don't care that they've moved it back to where we don't start our rankings till a certain part of the year. All of that stuff is played in with the preseason rankings. And if you start high, like if you start out of the top 25, the ability to get all the way up to where you need to be, like to get into the playoffs, and this will change now that they've expanded the playoffs. But the way it was is if you started, you know, outside of the top 25 and not receiving votes, the likelihood of you getting to the playoffs in a 4-team playoff was dick. You know, you just weren't going to get there.
No.
Now, this is why I'm a big fan of them expanding the playoffs. Like, this is one of the big points is because now those preseason rankings and that first set of rankings, it's not going to dictate whether you're screwed or not. Mm-hmm. Because this first set of rankings come out, what, like 4 or 6 weeks into the season? Yeah. So a good chunk of football has been played. And at that point, it's almost like it's concrete and stone. People aren't going to move up or down that much unless they get beat by 80, and nobody gets beat by 80 anymore. And yeah. So that's why the college football expansion is exciting to me, just because those initial rankings aren't going to screw other teams.
Well, I look back as a great example of what you're talking about. If you look back at like Cincinnati, you know, when you go back to the year before they made the playoff, right? You know, they start off outside of the top 25, right? Kept rolling, doing their thing. And they cruised along and did a really good job of building up their reputation throughout the season, sure. But despite the fact that they cruised through that schedule, remained pretty much undefeated the entire season, Cincinnati ends up missing out on the playoff that first year. And it wasn't until they had gotten established in the eyes of the committee in the next season that they even had a shot to make it. And so it's like you had to rely on the previous season to dictate what you were going to be able to do the next year. And that's not fair to a team like that.
The bias in college football just screwed so many more people as opposed to other sports. Because I'll tell you right now, you can be ranked preseason number one in baseball. You may not make the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, you see guys like Wake Forest who started off number one and then really obviously cooled off. Turns out they weren't really the number one team. But even with that, you know, they've fallen off a bit. They've come back. But you've seen teams like that who've been a highly ranked team early in the season completely disappear.
And because there's more data, and I understand there are only, you know, there's only so many data points in football, and I get that. But to me, that just means there's – and the transitive property in sports never worked. But it's – some of this has got to be the eye test in football. But, you know, with baseball, you still have a – there's – you just have more data points. Same in softball, same in basketball. So, I – again, like, I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of college football right now, even though it's, like, transfer season. But again, so, you know, Aggie softball up to fourth. I haven't checked the softball RPI, but I would assume if they're up to fourth, then their RPI's got to be good. And quite frankly, when you're sweeping teams, it kind of doesn't matter where their RPI is. And again, RPI, you know, Ole Miss is north of 500 as a team. They're just getting battered in conference play. Mm-hmm. And that's just part of being in the SEC and working on a diamond, no matter which one you're on. So you can, I mean, you potentially have two supers. So the Aggies, you know, softball has this weekend series. And gosh, you would love them to go win that series. I mean, well, you love them to sweep. You love them to sweep, and you can't get swept. So anywhere in between, you know, win the series, don't get swept. And I know the last time I said that, they went and got swept. So I should shut my mouth.
Go out there and win that thing. Just go out there and do it.
Yeah, win two for the Gipper. Win not two just one. Win two. Win the series. And it was great. I don't know if you saw senior day, you know, for softball. It was real nice. They brought flowers for the Ole Miss seniors as well.
It's cool.
I don't know if you've seen the story of it is Trinity Cannon's aunt.
Yes.
Okay. So if y'all haven't seen it, go on X, or you can probably go on TexAggs. I'm sure there's a thread on the baseball softball. And her name is Rebus Ward Daggett or something like that. But it's not her Twitter account. They've done a story about it. I think it was the Eagle or KBTX. And if you were watching, it was the Alabama series, right? Because they were away.
Yeah.
And when they scored and they show Aggie fans that she was the one like doing toe touches and being like a total crazy super fan.
Oh yeah.
That's Trinity Cannon's aunt, I believe. I think I got that right.
Yeah, I think that's
and,
right.
And she is a cancer survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, so just go find the story. I'm telling you, go find it on X. I guarantee you, just go to Trinity Cannon's profile. I'm sure she's retweeted it or reposted it. But it's a really cool story. And you know, she was there for senior day as well. So it's just, it's one of those things that when you're having a great season or you're having a bad season, you know, these are the stories these are the stories you can't write, right? You know, sports write stories that you think are make believe, and they're just not.
No, there's stories that matter in life and the things that are very important to us. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, this is, you know, these are sports, they are for fun, just like this podcast, you know, we're here to have fun. But, yeah, I mean, it's cool to see stories like that come out of our team and other teams. Like, anytime you see something like that, like, one of my favorite traditions, one of my all-time favorite new college football traditions is the Iowa Wave.
I bet just the Iowa Wave, yeah.
The Iowa Wave is phenomenal, and that's a great story that is so far beyond the scope of sports, and I love that.
And I get that it's not just a game to the athletes playing. I do understand that. But all of us watching are not athletes, okay? And I think sometimes there are some super fans that maybe need to be reminded of that. And whatever you did in high school does, you know, 25 years ago probably doesn't translate to today's game. So,
yeah.
And just because, you know, you've coached, you know, a 7-8-year-old, you know, machine pitch league doesn't mean that you questioning Schlossnagel is really going to be valid at all. So,
no, the man getting paid to do this. So just remember that.
And this is coming from a person who was awful about it. Like, sports used to ruin my week. Like, the Aggies could ruin my weekend, no problem. Yeah, the Cowboys could ruin my Sunday. Yeah, it's just one of those perspective and the older you get kind of things, I think.
I'm proud that I've hit that point at the age of 32. Like, I'm sitting here just like, yeah, like a weekend doesn't hurt me for baseball. Like, honestly, even with the Florida series, people are like, oh, it's all falling apart. See, the pitching's not there. And I'm like,
this is what happens when you get to the SEC. We all knew it and saw it.
And I was like, give it a week, people. It's fine. If it happens again, then yeah, you know, that's probably the trend. But we've turned that around.
You know what? Find a hobby that's not baseball.
No, I've got one, and I love it.
In the days that baseball's not playing, I urge you people to find a hobby that's not baseball.
Yeah, go shoot. Go bowl. Go do something.
Knit. Read. Knit. And don't read articles on tech. Like, don't read threads on TechSex that aren't started by mods.
Except for mine on the baseball uniform tracker, because I kind of enjoy that one. It's fun.
But yeah, but that's not an opinionated thing, one thing or the other. That's the fun of the superstition of baseball, right?
Well, that was one of my favorite things. Like, I went back and read some of the comments, and some people were like, are people, it's like, oh, maybe we're actually just struggling on the road because it's hard to play on the road. Like, that's not what superstition's about, damn it. Yeah. Superstition is about the fact that the gray uniforms are terrible and we should get rid of them and we should start wearing cream on the road. I'm like, okay, people, it's fine.
It's not the middle relievers and late relievers on Saturdays, it's the pinstripes. And you're like, oh, that's...
Well, believe it or not, it ain't the pinstripes this year, Bubba. They are undefeated.
Right.
We have undefeated pinstripes. We have undefeated maroon tops. The brand-new maroon uniforms are 14-0. A whoop.
Nice.
I love that. I love that. It's a great uniform too, and it's such a nice little throwback to this, you know, to the late 70s, early 80s. That look for us, it's great. I love it.
Oh no, it's a fresh look, man. 100%.
I'm glad we have it. Well, and that's been the nice part. It's like we've got cool uniforms. We got a cool team. People know we're a cool team.
Yeah, well, we're a fun team to watch.
We are a fun team to watch.
And chicks dig the long ball.
Yes, they do dig the long ball. What they don't dig is slow starts, which is what we are currently dealing with as of the most recent update. I think we're down 3-0 after the first. But once again, it's early. That's how we tend to play.
After the first?
Nah.
Well, and you also have to, for those that are newer to baseball, because if you're an Aggie and a sport that you know nothing about has a lot of success, you're going to start watching a ton of that sport, aren't you?
Yep.
Right? And so for those of y'all that aren't fully up to speed on just kind of how baseball works, once you turn the lineup over twice and these hitters are seeing the pitcher for the third time, things generally go poorly for the pitcher.
Yeah.
Because this is a sport where 1 in 3 times you fail. Mm-hmm. Or excuse me, 1 in 3 times you succeed. And if you succeed at a 1 out of 3 clip, like, that's amazing.
I mean, that if you succeed at 1 out of 3,
you're in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, you're in the Hall of Fame easy, because if you're batting over 300 for your career.
But the problem is good hitting beats good pitching beats good hitting every day of the week.
Correct.
But by the third time that this batter has seen you, he's seen everything you have.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why once you hit that third time through the lineup, yeah, you see pitchers really trying, like they're trying like something that they probably wouldn't try against this batter because they've exhausted what they know they could get him out on. And so just, you know, if you didn't know, the third time through the lineup is really key. But if you're pitching well, then the third time through the lineup is 6 outs. That's 6 innings.
Yeah.
You know, or somewhere around the fourth, fifth, or sixth inning, depending on how many base runners you have. Because we walk so much and because we don't strike out a ton, we do have runners on base. So that's why we're seeing the third time through the lineup is in the fourth and fifth inning. That's why you're seeing these numbers. Hence, there you go. Mm-hmm. Ta-da.
Yeah. We have done a very good job of getting bodies on base. And that's something we've done all season. Mm-hmm. And we haven't been as bad in the lobster department, which is great.
the funniest part about the Lobsters is we leave the most on base when we score like 17 and 18 runs.
Right.
We're like, we scored 18 runs and left 13 on base. And you're like, holy shit.
Yeah, that's a lot of runs. And that's a lot of people on the base paths. We do that well, you know, but.
You win by 11 and you left a dozen on the bases. And you're like, oh boy, it really could have been like
way worse.
90s aluminum bat college baseball style. Like the numbers Miami used to put up, you know.
The best. Oh, so good. That was a good era of baseball. I love the 90s for baseball. That was fun.
I've said it before, and everybody gets the joke, and there was a Saturday Night Live skit about it years ago, about the all-steroid Olympics, right? I don't want to allow juicing. That, like, I'm not saying that because just the long-term effects that has on people is terrible.
Sure.
I want to see home run derbies with the old aluminum bats.
Why not? See how far they can actually fly.
Straight up, like they juice should the do balls. Something.
Yeah, it's like juice the balls, aluminum bats,
and do it before anybody shows up. That way, you don't kill any spectators, and you don't kill any of the kids in the outfield. Because if you do that, you're gonna have to put netting all the way around, literally the entire field.
Yeah.
Now you could put the kids in the outfield, but they'd have to be like in those bouncy soccer ball things, you know, like the full inflatable things. But
I pop it.
I want to see them just go into a stadium, take like the top five or six home run guys. And I don't even care. You don't even have to have a bracket. I just want to see the top five dudes in like a standard, just one round. Yeah. That's what you do. Just make it a one round. Whoever wins. Right.
Right.
And do like a standard one round with the aluminum bats. And I want to see Chase Laviolette's exit speed, and I want to see him hit a ball 600 yards. But the dude from Florida, Castiglione, mm-hmm. whatever his name is, you see he hit a ball over 500, like 536 this weekend?
Yeah, launched it.
Absolutely. What would he do with an aluminum bat?
Oh.
Come on, you don't want to see that? You're talking about, you know, what is it, San Francisco, and I think in Pittsburgh, you know, you can hit it out in the water?
Yeah, both of them.
You're talking about hitting the ball over the river.
Mm-hmm. Potentially.
Want to see that.
I think we all want to see that. I would not be opposed. That'd be fun.
See, I ask so little.
That's it. Give the fans what they want. You know what the fans want? Dingers. Because Chase the long ball.
Dingers. Never bunt.
Never bunt. Hit dingers. Except when it's actually beneficial because we have some speed on the base pass and we can get away.
Except for Ollie Camarillo is an absolutely fantastically technical bunter, might add.
Well, I made a comment on Twitter the other day, actually, that was pretty funny. When Ollie laid that bunt down, some coach had posted, yeah, see, A&M can hit the ball really well, but they can still do positional bunting and do a really good job with it. And I said, man, after years of dealing with this crap under Augie, it's kind of nice being on the other side of the table, being able to, hey, we can lay down a bunt and we can smash it. We can do whatever.
You know, and what's the phrase everybody always uses for the top recruits? Yeah, mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. The five-tool player?
Yes.
We're a five-tool team, and that's frightening.
No doubt about it.
I'll just put, like, we're a five-tool team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't just have one or two players. When you look at our roster, you look at our lineup, you look at our pitching, and I get it. Like, we don't have the most dominant pitching in the nation, but we pretty much almost have the most dominant pitching in the nation when you start looking at, you know, if you want to do metrics and numbers.
Mm-hmm. It's nice.
This is a five-tool team. That's what you have to win.
When
Ole Miss went on the run, it wasn't like this total crazy Cinderella story that they were just getting lucky and everything's bouncing their way. They were a damn good team, and they're coached by a damn fine manager, and they were doing everything that you have to do to win baseball games. Again, well, we said it last week. Tennessee showed us you can't just mash your way to victory. You have to pitch. You have to play defense. You have to be able to run. You have to be able to throw. And honestly, it's almost six-tool because what we've seen, we saw it some last year, and we're really seeing a lot of it this year between the growth from last year to this year's players and then the injection of guys like Schott and Montgomery and Appel is the mental side of this game. So it's almost like we're six-tool, and they don't get too high. They don't get too low. They truly stay in the moment, and they listen to their – like, and it's not just listen and obey orders. They buy in and truly trust what their coaches are telling them between hitting, pitch, all of it. And it's like I feel like I'm not yelling at them, or like, but it's just – it's so exciting. You know, when you think about the kind of team and roster that Schloss has put together, and I'm going to shift back over to the other diamond. Look at what Trisha Ford is doing on, you know, with softball.
Yep.
We don't just have a bunch of big mashers. We don't have a bunch of slappers. You know, we have more than one pitcher. She's brought in pitchers. Mm-hmm. The defense, softball can be tough because you're talking about being real close to that ball. You know, mm-hmm. Softball defense can be a little tougher. Now, I will say that they're a little bit nicer when it comes to awarding hits and errors in softball, just because sure. You're almost standing on top of the plate sometimes, especially when you're around the hot corners. But you've seen great defensive play. You've seen hitting for contact. You've seen moving just, you know, base to base, pod to pod, moving them around. You've seen mashing. You've seen great defense. You've seen pitching. Obviously, you have a dominant pitcher, and in softball, it's different. And I don't know if anybody saw the graphic, and I didn't see what the other girls threw for the weekend, but Emily Kennedy has now thrown, she was basically throwing the most pitches in D1 softball of any pitcher.
Wow.
And that's nutso. But, man, that's softball.
Yeah.
And as long as she can stay healthy in, like, these midweek games, Emily Levitt's pitching tonight against U of H. You know, you have Brooke Vestal. You have Shaylee Ackerman. If Shaylee can get on a roll, we're super dangerous because we've seen a good Shaylee Ackerman in the circle. And so if she can get on a roll and you have Brooke Vestal and you have Emily Levitt able to kind of Riley Wiggins with a web gem to get out of a jam. Baseball, softball is going on right now, so I'm trying to keep an eye on it. Had bases loaded in the top of the second, and Emily Levitt was able to get out of it. So that was fantastic. Web gem by Rylan Wiggins, you know, yet again. Mm-hmm. She's so fun. But, you know, you see that in softball too. And I thought that quote that I mentioned earlier was really telling when Trisha Ford said, "We're playing Aggie softball." And so to her, she's the same as Schlossnagel. It's not Schlossnagel ball. It's not Trisha Ford ball. This is, we're all going to embrace this as this is what Aggie softball is supposed to be. This is what Aggie baseball is supposed to be.
Right.
And that I absolutely loved that comment. She said, "We're playing Aggie softball and it's a lot of fun." And so she's already just, you know, reset the culture and just, she's starting to turn the dial up. So I think they're just, and again, I get that there's not as many softball fans as there are baseball fans. That's why the stadiums are different sizes. I totally get it. But if you're not watching softball at this point, then you just absolutely must hate women, pretty much. I like women's sports. I can't think of another. If you're an Aggie and you're not paying attention to the softball team, like, you're nuts, because you love to see the maroon and white doing well. It shouldn't matter what sport. Man, no. I'm not a track and field guy, but I love seeing them. And if for some reason I can catch them on TV or they're on ESPN Plus, I'll watch some meets. Why wouldn't I? They're Aggies. I want to see them win.
One of my favorite postseason runs I can remember in my lifetime, as far as like A&M sports, leans back on soccer back in 2014. That was a ton of fun. You know, we would go out to the games. That was like right after graduation, but I was still very involved with the Maroon Militia guys. RIP. But, you know, back in the day, you know, with the Maroon Militia.
Did they disband?
Yeah, they're not really a thing at this point. It's kind of readjusted where it's like just true like student section stuff. It's not really the songs and the chants like it was at that point.
Boo.
Yeah, kind of a boo, but
I'm an Aggie and I'm booing that. Hey, current students, or probably if there are any current students that watch this, it's probably just one. Get the Maroon Militia back together.
Well, and said, if anybody wants some pointers, I mean, that's something that we thoroughly enjoyed doing. You know, had the banners, we had the flags, we had the chanting. But the thing was, it was really cool. We had our own little section, and we were hosting throughout the entirety of the tournament until the finals. So, you know, we get Penn State for the very last game right before we get to the end. We win that game 2-1. Completely packed Ellis Field. It was incredible. It was so much fun. And there was a great connection with us and the players. The players would jump over the railing into the stands to saw them off with the fans. That was just the era. And that's a lot of fun. And it's cool to see that going on with softball. And I would love to see that continue to happen with every sport on this campus.
Yeah. I mean, all we want as fans is success. We want to see Aggies win. And I don't care what the jersey looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I want swimming and diving to win a national championship.
Yeah. I mean, I want us to win everything.
I want Jamie to continue to turn Aggie volleyball around. I want Aggie volleyball to be a lot of fun.
I agree.
And, you know, and if it's, and this is, look, this is a fact of life, and people can take this however they want to. If it's a sport that you don't care about, you'll watch it if we're winning.
Yeah, that's true.
In fact, if you don't watch it at all and they get to like the playoffs, or you get to, you know, like tennis, golf.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a big tennis. I played tennis as a kid, but I'm like, I don't watch Wimbledon. I don't watch the French Open. You know, I can respect the amazing talent. But like, that's just not what I do, you know?
Well, it's like, I always enjoyed playing tennis versus actually watching.
Same. But I can appreciate. I love the workout. I love the sport. I just watching it's a little tough for me, but if there's an Aggie, like, well, especially the current Aggies, but think about this. I mean, were there are people that maybe weren't huge golf fans, but they're tuning in, you know, when Aggies are playing, when Aggies play on the tour, you know, when Sam was at the Masters.
Yeah.
There were Aggies tuning in. They were like, I play golf, but I don't watch it. Kind of same with you and me in tennis. Right. And so there's, you know, it's the draw to the school. And, you know, it's that kind of, you know, that school we love so dear kind of thing, you know, being right on the tails of Muster, because that was definitely a line in my speech. But you want to see Aggies be successful. It doesn't matter the sport. It shouldn't matter the sport. And it's okay if you don't understand the sport. If you're watching a sport because we're doing really good at it and you don't understand it, send me a DM. I'm a sports weirdo. If it's not cricket, I know the rules.
Yeah, cricket's just, God.
I've tried.
Goofy game. I've tried. I would support it, but it's just tough to keep up with. You're not wrong. But I want to know more about your trip up there to Colorado. Can you fill us in on that?
Oh, yeah. So I've never been to the state of Colorado before, so I get to mark that one off the list. You know, remember the old, there was an old Mitch Hedberg stand-up. He's like, I want to have a map on my wall, and I want to have a pin everywhere that I've been, but I have to travel to the top two corners of the map first so I won't fall down. So now I've been to Colorado. I flew from, like I said, IH to Denver. And then Denver, it's a kind of little puddle jumper over to Durango. It's about the same as flying from like Houston to Dallas.
Yeah.
That's like 40 minutes in the air. Mm-hmm. But flew over the Rockies. There were enough breaks in the clouds. I got the obligatory, like, out the window with the tip of the wing in the picture. Kind of, I got a whole bunch of those because there's still tons of snow in the Rockies.
Yeah.
And out where I was, I flew into Durango. My buddy Brian, who I was in the Corps with, he's a class 14 guy, Marine Corps. He was kind of the one that's probably suggested and set this whole thing up from the jump because it's the Four Corners Club.
Right.
And so they came and picked me up in Durango, and we went and had dinner with the club president. Mm-hmm. And then we you know, had to be like, he lives in Ignacio, which is 15-20 minutes maybe from Durango.
Right.
Just a bunch of ranchers, man. Mm-hmm. So got out there. It's great to see Brian. I hadn't seen Brian in years. Let's see, Friday, what we do? Went to dinner. We went and had some cocktails. Durango's not a big town, and it's kind of touristy to an extent.
11,000 somewhere in there. Yeah.
Yeah. But we had a good time. You know, did a little bit of bar hopping. There's a super old saloon there. Like, it's still got a bullet hole in the wall where, like, in the 1800s, a dude, like a cowboy, rode his horse into the bar and started shooting. Yeah. It's called the Diamond Bell Saloon. I highly recommend it. There was a, they have like a second story kind of observatory story. And right there, like across the facing of it, it said, work is the curse of the drinking class.
Amen.
but so we went in there and there was this dude and it's like straight up looked like Willie almost. Like if he'd had pigtails, it was Willie. But when you turned around and faced the bar, he sounded just like Willie. But the best part was we walked in the bar and he was finishing up a song. And the very next song he plays is Road Goes On Forever and the Party Never Ends.
Classic.
I was just like, this is meant to be, man. Mm-hmm. And what's funny is my buddy Brian, he's a cowboy. He is a true cowboy. Mm-hmm. Right. His cousin Tim, he is a true cowboy. All right. I'm a dude in a cowboy hat. All right. But we walk in but the hotel that's attached to the saloon is like super touristy. You know, they've left it as far as, you know, the old time kind of decorations and just, you know, all the lamps and the wallpaper and all this kind of stuff. So it's a tourist trap relative to how much you pay a night for the hotel. I didn't stay there, by the way.
Sure.
So there were people, you know, in the bar, in the lounge. It's not real big. And this couple was there and you could tell that they're tourists, right? Like, first time in Durango, I'm like, those people don't belong here. Because they weren't a cowboy and they weren't a hippie. And that's pretty much the only two.
Yeah, one of them.
And so we walked in and they two, there were only two seats at the end of the bar. So they both sat down and I just kind of sit at the corner end of the bar. And she goes, are y'all cowboys? And
love people.
And I went to respond, and Brian goes, "Sure shit, I am." I was like, "There's your answer." I told him, I was like, "Well, these two boys, Cowboys. I'm just from Texas." But yeah, Durango's a cute little town. If you ever get a chance to go, by the way, it's beautiful. You're right, kind of. You can view the La Plata Mountains. I mean, you know, kind of that area.
Mm-hmm.
Not far from New Mexico. In fact, no. Brian has a gold claim. He has a gold claim actually in New Mexico, like right across the border. Nice. But trying to think.
Four Corners is a really interesting area. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Saturday we got up. I had to unfortunately do a tiny little bit of work, but we got up. I did that, and then we went and rode horses, just this beautiful, just kind of a ride through a ranch there. The guy let us use his horses, and it was a beautiful day. The weather was perfect. It was, you know, mid-60s to high-70s. Humidity's like at 30%, if that. Yeah. You're not even sweating, no matter how much sun is raining down on you. Yeah. Got done with that, and then watched baseball. Drank some beer and watched baseball. Went to the casino, you know, just kind of had a good time. And then Sunday, we were going to try and help him eradicate some prairie dogs, those little destructive jerks.
Yeah. We don't much care for prairie dogs.
Yeah. But we couldn't put it together. But then Sunday, obviously Muster went in Durango. And then Monday just kind of hung out, got to meet a couple of his neighbors that just randomly do, you know, the pop bys, cause they don't do telephones. well, where he lives, he's kind of like in a little bowl. And so the internet is awful.
Right.
But yeah, no, I just had a wonderful time. It was a great reset. The fact that my phone reception wasn't great and the internet wasn't great was nice.
Yeah.
Cause I told people, I was like, I'm going out of town, and I was able to actually honor me going out of town, but Muster was great. It's such an honor to speak at Muster. My speech might've run a little long, but, everybody seemed to enjoy it. I was pretty happy with it. But yeah, just a great weekend, man. And I won money. We went to the casino twice, and I won money both times.
Bingo. There you go.
Yeah. First time I went in, I put 100 on the roulette table and walked away with 200, and then, sat down at a slot, put in 100 and walked away with 200. And then the next day I walked in, or the next time we went in, I dropped 100 on the roulette table and I rolled out with 200. The new dealer came in, and if I'd seen the signs earlier, I would have walked with 300, but she just, I should have just been like, look, here's $100 and I'll leave. You don't have to spend the ball. It was a great trip. Colorado's beautiful. Obviously Four Corners Club, it's a small club, just cause people are so spread out, but yeah. You know, I wish them all the luck in the world, you know, growing that club, because I know there's desire to grow the club. It's just tough.
There's just unfortunately not a lot of people out there in that
region. Yeah, so when there's not a lot of people, then you got to figure out how many Aggies are, you know, in not a lot of people kind of thing.
Well, think about that. The largest city in the region is, you know, Farmington, New Mexico, and population there is like 45,000. Like, it's not a big town.
You got to go across the Rockies basically to see population.
Right. So. You know, you're stuck on the western side of the continental divide essentially out there. So it's kind of tough to get warm bodies, but I get that.
It was beautiful though. I had a wonderful time. Like I said, it's such an honor to be able to speak at Muster. So, just a great weekend, able to kind of mentally reset. I did not dig the temperatures being low at night.
It does get there, doesn't it?
I got to Denver and it was 40 degrees and I was like, nope, I'm going back to Texas. but it was so gorgeous during the day though. It was just so pretty. Mm-hmm. It was a fantastic weekend. It really was, just being able to share Muster, you know, in a different place. And then also just being able to kind of reset and refresh.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, just kind of relax, take it easy, you know, take it easy in Colorado, but I mean, not that kind of take it easy, not the Denver kind of take it easy.
I mean, you could, but not
nah, it's just hanging out with dogs and just enjoying being out on a farm. It was nice.
That is nice. Well, meanwhile, your wife and your friends were hanging out with me Friday night.
That's right. Yeah, they got tickets to come to the show. It would have been a bit of a commute for me at that point.
It would have been, and I said, completely understood the circumstances. I'm like, yeah, no, Roy's busy. He's got things to do, of course, but really enjoyed the show. Harry's always, I mean, I'm going to miss that place because it's always a party. Here was the crazy thing. You know, Casey Donahue, give him all the credit in the world. He was really, really cool to us. You know, shouted us out on stage, the whole shebang. But when we got out there to play, you know, crowd was pretty well full on the floor already, and we got out there and played ourselves a pretty hopping show. So yeah, by 10 o'clock, of course, that's when we're going on. By 11, the entire room is full. Everybody's singing the songs. I mean, that was the cool thing, was hearing the amount of people singing the new stuff as well as our old stuff, and we could hear them physically singing and having a great time. So very cool to see that we still have a lot of great fans in town and they want to continue to come out and support. But the crazy thing was, like 3-4 songs into Casey Donahue's set, the younger portion of that crowd and the Carson Jeffrey people started kind of trickling out, and it ended up being, which, you know, you don't want to see that, but at the same time, I'm watching this and thinking to myself,
double-edged sword.
That's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people that came to see y'all.
Exactly. So that was something Carson was taking in to go chat with our point of contact over there at Harry's to say, hey, you know, these were the people we brought in. Let's get this thing going sometime in the fall. That'd be great. Yeah. Absolutely. Love seeing that Sorrell just hit a double, and now A&M has cut the lead down to 1. It's 3-2 with runners at second and third with one out. So there you go.
Well, I have more random breakfast talk.
Okay, what do you got?
This was a conversation we had. So so yesterday morning, we woke up, and Brian had made breakfast 2 days in a row. And I was like, hey, man, let me take you to breakfast. And I know there's not much around here, but there's the casino, right? We can go just eat at the casino restaurant. So we go up there, and they have like a partial menu. Ever since COVID, this casino has really been just kind of screwing with everything,
right?
But the menu's still good. Like, it's a fantastic breakfast menu, and I'm looking through it, and they have the standard stuff like chicken fried steak and eggs, you know, a sirloin and a steak and eggs. You know, they have omelets, and then they have like the sweet side of breakfast, right?
Yeah.
And so I decide I'm a biscuits and gravy dude. Ooh. Right? Like, yeah. I just, me and biscuits and gravy, like, we like peas and carrots, homie. So they have biscuits and gravy on the menu, and it comes with a meat, right? So you get to decide, you know, ham, sausage links, sausage patties, right?
Okay.
Why does that not include eggs?
That's a good question.
So then my question is, maybe not enough people are adding it. So then my question to you is, when you eat, you know, biscuits and gravy, and you have a breakfast meat with it, do you also have eggs?
I feel like that's typically how it ends up being, more than one meat most of the
time. Yeah, well, and I get that there's sausage in the gravy, right? I get that. But it's sure. Like these tiny little chunks, and it's just there for flavoring. Like, come on.
But no, you want the actual physical. Like,
you want eggs, sausage. And you want sausage or ham or bacon, right? But you got to have eggs with breakfast.
Yes.
So, okay. See, I'm not crazy. You're not crazy. They're crazy.
Wild pitch. We have tied the ball game.
That, I don't know why that just stuck in my craw, because I was looking at some of the other things on the menu. I'm like, why do these have eggs? What are you doing?
No.
It's like a fresh fruit plate. Right. 2 eggs, your choice. What are you talking about?
Well, and it's not like they're ever lacking for eggs. It's like, it's always an option, you know?
Who sticks their fork in their watermelon and it runs through the egg yolk? What's happening here? Why are your eggs with this?
Damn Yankees up here. they are north of the Mason-Dixon, so, you know, maybe they don't know.
And I got one more thing, and it's kind of a shout-out. Let me grab it right quick.
Uh-oh. Roy is off to go fetch something real quick.
It's right here. Shut up.
Let's see what he's got.
All right, so I had the opportunity, gosh, it's been probably a couple months, to go out to a happy hour with Kim Kattari, and I hope I got her name or her last name right. Mm-hmm. But she is a professor at A&M in ethnomusicology. So it's Department of Performance Studies.
Right.
And she wrote a book. Okay. And it turns out she wrote a book, and I think I've got this right. She wrote a book kind of based off of her thesis.
Yeah.
For her thesis for a PhD. And so she expanded on it and turned it into a book.
Right.
I would be willing to bet that no one that listens to this likes Psychobilly, or maybe even knows what it is. All right.
Psychobilly.
But so Rockabilly, the origins of Rockabilly really go back to like Bill Haley and the Comets. So like the origins of the first Rockabilly really are back to the 50s, you know, that twangy guitar and the upright bass and all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. And so like the stuff your parents listened to, you know, when they decided to pull it forward to the 70s and 80s, it was really kind of called Rockabilly. They sped it up a little bit, but Rockabilly ended up having to basically just do a bunch of covers of the old stuff, just maybe a little faster.
Right.
But that's kind of what they expected. And Psychobilly is this kind of subculture. And she writes, and so obviously it's super in depth and it's super academic. But so I was reading this on the plane. Let me see if I can get it to focus on it.
Yep. Right in front of you.
Further out.
Put it right in front of your face. Give it a second. Maybe. You're not being able to read it. It's not one to focus up.
All right. Well, so the book is called Psychobilly, Subcultural Survival. And what's fascinating is, she references a lot of other studies that have been done for like the heavy metal subculture and like the rap culture and ska and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So if you're a super nerd, like super music nerd, this is fantastic.
Cool.
And I'm a pretty good reader. I read a pretty good clip, you know, pages, you know, words per minute. I am just past halfway. And that was a lot of hours in a plane. I'm just past halfway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a difficult read because it's educational.
Yes.
But man, so that said, it has put me on a pure Psychobilly kick that I have firmly loved. Maybe if I turn the blur, I don't want to turn the blur off. You guys don't need to see my messy, my messy study.
Ooh.
But yeah, so it's so hilarious because I go to Colorado, go through Denver, which is just such a different culture in and of itself. I go to Durango and Ignacio, which are obviously different cultures and just like pure cowboys and ranchers. And all the while I'm reading up on Psychobilly, which is completely like bonkers, like California. And really the true Psychobilly revolution started in London. It's just a fascinating read, but shout out to Kim. It's not that she listens to this. Sure, she has more exciting things to listen to.
Well, she ought to. Come check it out.
You got any new vinyls?
I got one brand new one. So this came in the mail. I had put in an order for it because this was the final pressing that they were ever going to do for it. So Whiskey Myers is obviously a very influential band, both in Texas and around, but a great band for me early on when I first moved to Texas. Now I walked in and their album Firewater was what they were touring on in the spring of 2011 when I first got to go see them. So that and their album Road of Life, which was the previous record, were the only two albums out at this point. And that was old school, the era for me when it came to like Whiskey Myers. That was the music I liked. The problem is Road of Life, the first record, you can't get online anywhere. It has been completely stricken from the internet. There's one song left on there, that's Lonely East Texas Nights. You can hear that anywhere, but virtually the rest of the record's gone. Like, it used to be on YouTube, it got struck, it was on Apple, it got pulled. So it's like, it's just gone. And I understand, because the production value on it wasn't great. It's, you know, it was 2008, and you were probably doing it in a garage somewhere. It wasn't great.
Yeah, but leaving it on YouTube, like, why not, you know?
I liked it on YouTube, but yeah, it got stricken. Anyway, they did one more final pressing in a gold leaf of that record.
There you go. Road
of Life. So there it is. And I've been jamming that because one of my all-time favorite Whiskey Myers songs, which is called Gone Away, it is the deep cuttiest of sad songs, but I love it. And it's on that record, and that makes me...
Well, and I bring up vinyls because a lot of the stuff, like the Psychobilly stuff, is really 70s, 80s.
Right.
And some of it 90s. But I kind of want to start trying to track down some of the old ones. So once I do, I'll just start come over and we can play them. And if I keep going down this rabbit hole at the rate I'm going, I'm going to have you teach me how to play upright bass.
Well, you know, you can't see it, but it is right there. We can definitely get you set up with that.
But
it's a fun instrument to play. I'll give you that. But yeah, as far as this week, we are actually the reason we're recording tonight and not tomorrow. I will be up in Stephenville. We are heading up to LJT, which is the big festival up there. We're playing up there tomorrow. It's us. The opening band's a kid named Angel White. I've looked up a lot about him. He sounds really good. Then it's us. Then it's Roger Krager. Then it's Randall Krager. King. Yep. And then Randall King, and it'll wrap up with Giovanni and the Hired Guns that night. So I'm looking forward to that. It'll be a fun day. Yeah, it's like three pretty good rock and country bands, and then like a rock band with Gio, which that'll be a lot of fun. Gio always puts on a great show. But
nice.
But we got that, and then Thursday we're going to just kind of have a rehearsal day, and then Friday we actually are going to be running down to Houston, Chase's father, who passed away. We're having his memorial service. And at mom's request, we are learning American Soldier by Toby Keith and performing it at the memorial service.
Nice. Good.
That's going to be our tribute for him. And right, so, on. And that's really something awesome. We know he was a big Toby Keith fan. He loved that song. So why not perform it for him?
There you go.
We're going to do that. And so that's exciting.
You will literally look back in 30 years and remember that as one of your most important performances.
I agree. And like I said, Chase, I mean, that's our brother. Yeah. And we love and support him. And we understand that with his departure after the live record at this point, it's understandable. But he did, when we got to see him on Saturday, he did tell us that he's fully intent on coming back. It's just going to have to take some time, which we get that.
Yeah, this is coming in the same vein of coming off of muster. The bonds you form with people. It's not just Aggies. You guys are tight. Being soldiers are tight. It's just, no matter where you are, there was something I kind of said is, no matter where you are in the world, they're there for you.
Yep.
So
that's what you like to see. But
well, it's kind of bittersweet, but that should be really awesome. But outside of that, not to switch gears, but great weekend for sports, and hope you guys are able to enjoy it.
Yep. Be sure to go follow, and please, by all means, like, if you enjoy what you're hearing and you want to share it with your friends, please kick it over to them. If you think there's an Aggie that might want to check this out, or even a non-Aggie who might want to check this out, by all means, send them our way. We're more than happy to get them
in. And we'll answer questions, and we're happy to take topic suggestions. We'll talk about just about anything. I think between Rob and I, we cover a pretty wide gamut of experience and knowledge, so we're happy to talk about anything, address anything. We can debate anything, even when it's dumb, because let's be honest, we're both dumb, so that works.
Hey, makes life easy.
That's in our wheelhouse.
It is in our wheelhouse. Well, so just one final baseball update for you. Boys are now leading 5-3 after two, so see,
that's the way it goes. Shocker.
And already kicked their starter out of the game, so here we are.
By the time you guys hear this, you'll know what's happening in softball.
Yeah, so keep an eye on it. It'll be all great and good. But once again, I am Roy May. That is Rob White. We are the Red.
You almost got it. You almost got it.
We are the Red Ass Podcast. Thank y'all. Take care.
Dumbass Podcast.
Have a great day, guys.
Yeah, don't.